to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 204. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me, or rather, I am with him.
Yes.
We are at the Casa de Cole Coffee here in an ice cold, snowy Las Vegas, Nevada.
I wouldn't say ice cold. It's colder.
It's chilly.
It's chilly.
It was chilly enough to snow. It's funny.
Snow sat on the ground.
Snow set on the ground, and that's, I guess, what I was going to get at. You know, like, I had this weird schedule today because I was working with the boys in Europe. Abby Subban and Simon Head are over there covering UFC Prague, and I was kind of helping them get everything filed on the site. So I had this weird thing where I got up at 2:30 in the morning to start working, and I looked out the office that time, man, and it was coming down. I mean, it was settling on the ground and on the grass, and especially in the mountains. I don't know if you know, like, maybe if you've never been to Las Vegas, or maybe if you just – you've come to Las Vegas and you just stay in the casinos the whole time. You might forget that there's, you know, we're in a valley. There's pretty big mountains around us, whatever. Yeah. So when it snows, it is kind of pretty, man. You see like the white snow-covered mountains. I mean, yeah, sometimes we get just a little caps or whatever. Yeah. But on a day like today, I mean, it's painted white all the way around. So it was really pretty. I will say that my son, I think, was bummed that he didn't get a snow day out of school. I don't know how many
they ever do that here.
I was going to say, I don't know how many times in his life he's going to get the opportunity to maybe get a snow day.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. But it was funny because as I was driving to come over here, I was half expecting to white knuckle it on the way over here,
be careful
for the icy roads. And I was a little bit concerned, but to be honest with you, the roads are fine.
Yeah.
It's cleared up. And now, as I look out of the Casa de Cole Coffee window, the snow has melted off the palm trees over here.
Yep.
It was a little bit. It was a good snow.
Yeah, I think the grill maybe still has some on it. But I think that was the unique thing that, Agent H decided to wake me up this morning to let me know that there was snow outside on the car, snow on the grill. And I don't know why she couldn't just let me know later on after
I
woke up.
Taking a nice picture of it.
Taking a nice picture. I was like, hey, take a mental picture or take a picture, send it to me later. Text it all up, write up something pretty. That's better, rather than wake me up. But, it's neat. I mean, this is one of the first times I think I can remember that it actually sat here for a minute. I've seen dustings on the ground here. And where you are out in the middle of the desert, it's a little bit different, but I think here more in Central Vegas, the heat of the strip, the heat of the freeway right there, I think it's just a little bit warmer here, so I don't usually see it here, but you're right around as for like the mountains. It's funny because when it snows around there, around like the mountains, usually we won't even notice it here down in the valley. We'll just see it, like you say. We'll pull up to a stoplight, and I'll look ahead, and I'm like, oh, wait, look in the mountains. That looks really pretty. But today, it actually snow down into the valley, or last night, I should say. So to actually see it, it's kind of neat, I know there's probably a lot of longtime Vegas residents that could probably count on, one hand the time that they've seen snow cover like this.
I don't remember seeing it like this since 2008. I know. So if people are, I know there's probably people from all around the world that are like, you jackass.
Like, this isn't,
like, I'm
this
sitting
isn't
in feet
yeah.
of snow right now, you asshole.
Yeah, like.
And I get it.
Yeah, I mean, like, where I'm from originally, like, we had snow plows, and there were stockpiles of salt and various salt sand mixtures that would plan for days like this. When you're out in a place like this, they don't have the massive amount of plow trucks or things. Oh. You know, I'm sure they have a plow somewhere that they could put it onto a truck here.
I saw a social media exchange where a local media source was talking to the city of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The city of Las Vegas does not even own a snow truck, but the Nevada State Department of Transportation
Of Transportation, yeah.
But yeah, they probably have one.
Yeah, because I imagine they would probably, if there was a need, like in Ohio and in Columbus, they have actual snow trucks or plow trucks that the blades are fixed on there. I mean, granted, they're replaceable, so should something happen, but they're made for it. Here, a lot of times, what you usually see is they've altered a truck to be able to add one on should they need to, but they probably use it once, in the life of the truck or something. So it's neat to actually see that they actually had to do it. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, man, I bet the roads, because people lose their fucking mind out here. Even driving to the airport the other day when it was raining, people were driving crazy and driving way too fast because it kind of, we've talked about it before, when the moisture
the
slicks,
little rain that we get,
the oil and stuff, everything just gets drawn out. But at least with what we had today, it didn't, I don't think it got to the point, like even right now when I was looking at earlier, it was like 40-ish or something like that. Like,
yeah.
You're not reaching the freezing point where most of that shouldn't freeze.
No.
Now, when you get further out, maybe with wind, it can kind of boost it up and maybe actually make it maybe freeze a little bit in some spots. But for the temperature itself, we shouldn't be experiencing that here. And then on most of the highways, usually the car exhaust and all that stuff,
yeah.
And the tires will kind of kill all that stuff. But
the dirt road that it takes to get to my house.
The dirt road and the tumbleweeds. I'm sure there's just frozen tumbleweeds, you know, right off to the sides of the road. And,
man. It's cool, man. Like I said, it's pretty to see. It's not so bad that it bothers anything. Maybe it'll freeze up tonight, but yeah, it's all gone now. It was there for a couple hours. We got
it's
to enjoy
neat,
it for
though.
Just a little bit.
It is
neat. And the mountains are pretty around it. It is pretty cool to see the white-covered mountains. So that's that. I feel bad for my son. I think he was really hoping to miss
to
a day
do
of
slides.
School. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, but I bet – has he ever went sledding?
No.
I know there's some place I saw the other day. It was so funny. The news lady – there was a little bit of snow somewhere on a hill. And, of course, Vegas News like, oh, we got to go cover this.
That's
you know,
right.
There are people actually sliding. And it was just such the smallest little bit of cover. But this reporter, she gets the idea of, hey, I'm going to sled down this hill with this kid, you know, and her cameraman shooting it. And, boom, they get pushed and they go down the hill. And lo and behold, the one path that they chose ran straight into a tree. And this poor thing, luckily they didn't, it wasn't a large hill, so they didn't get
amazing.
Like massive speed going, but I was like, oh, that's how Vegas does sledding. We're
phenomenal.
So bad that when we go to sled, we sled right into a hill or something. But it was pretty funny to see. So yeah, it's those of you out there in real places that get real snow, you know, it's funny how people react to it out here. And me growing up around snow, I loved it at a time, you know, but I'm glad that I don't have to deal with it. I'm glad I don't have to go out and, you know, scrape off your windows and sit out there and have to have like a heater block for your car to get it started. Like some of the places where I know some of you listening to this are, you know, I feel for you, you know, I feel for you, but
I remember taking a trip to Milwaukee and Danny Boy
that's
Downs.
Brutal.
Well, we were there during the summer, but Danny Boy Downs was talking about how, like, during the winter, like, it gets so cold there, like, your just car doesn't even work. Like, you
it's
can't
unreal.
Even turn it on.
It's unreal. Some places they literally have, like, heaters for the engine block so that the engine can have enough warmth to actually, so the mechanisms can try to work. It's unreal, some of the places. Yeah, I mean, that shit's hardcore. And that's why when I see stuff like that, I'm like, I'll take the heat. I'll take being sweaty and being, you know, hot because I can cool myself off. But to be in a place where it's like, and something like that, the weather just wins. Like, weather wins. That's when you see
just
mother
freezes
frosty.
Over.
That's
Can't
when they
have that.
Just walk outside with your frosty beverage, stick it in the snow, and you're good to go. That's one of the reminders, you know. And I promise we'll get to MMA talk after this. But that's when you're like, Mother Nature will kick your ass if she really wants to. Like that, it's so impressive to be places where it's like you kind of. It's a different speed of life. You have to. You could want to rush to your job. You could want to rush to go do this and this. But there's at a certain point, you're just like, you can't fight it. You just got to roll with it, you know. And so, you know, you might want to go to the store. You might want to go shopping and do whatever. But if Mother Nature's like, fuck you, you got to stay inside. You can't even drive out and this stuff. You're just like, okay. And there's something good about that, that slower pace of life. And I think that's why, you know, you go to some places that do experience a lot of the snow. People are happy because you're forced at sometimes to just stop.
No.
And just,
they're just not happy. They're bored.
They could
they're
be bored.
Sitting inside,
that's probably why they drink so much.
That's
probably why they
What's
drink
our
so much.
Excuse? All right. Well, listen, as you said, we will get to MMA. The big news of the day, Georges St-Pierre has finally officially retired. He held a press conference in Montreal. Our own young Mike Bond was there on the scene. And by our own, I guess I should say MMA Junkie's own, not the MMA Roadshow's own. We haven't employed Mike Bond to go.
It doesn't say MMA Roadshow staff reporter on his lower third.
No, MMA Junkies Mike Bond was on scene, and he was there to collect some of it. So here's just a few minutes. If you didn't get a chance to catch the full press conference, we've boiled it down to just a couple quick minutes so you can hear a few moments of what many people consider the greatest of all time, hanging it up for good, we think.
Yeah, today I... Everybody knows it's not a surprise. I announced my retirement. There's no tears. I'm very happy to do it. It takes a lot of discipline, though, to retire on top. it was a long process in my mind, and but it's time to do it. Only a few people have done it, and I always said that I want to retire on my own and not be told to retire. So it takes disciplines, and combat sport and full contact sport, that's how you should retire. You should retire on top, and that is very hard to do. And I'm happy I had the discipline and the wisdom to do it. When I was young, the reason why I started doing mixed martial arts is because I watched Royce Gracie growing up when he won the first UFC. And at that particular moment, I knew exactly that's what I wanted to do. It's weird. It's like I had a vision. And I want to say thank you to Royce Gracie to what inspired me. Also, thank you to Jean-Yves Thériault to have inspired me, not only as an athlete, as a good role model. And thank you to Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky is probably the best athlete all sport combined. His record would probably never been broken. And not only that he's an incredible athlete for me, he's an incredible role model. And through my career, I always try to mold myself like Wayne Gretzky. I always wanted to be like Wayne Gretzky. And I'm a huge fan of Wayne Gretzky. And I remember I used to watch him when he won the Stanley Cup. I was very young. My dad used to wake me up every time the Oilers won. And the Oilers was my team. Sorry for Montreal Canadiens. I know I'm in the Bell Centre, but they used to be my team. And Wayne Gretzky was my idol growing up. So thanks for the inspiration. Everything start with a dream, and I was able to have a dream because of these guys. And thanks to the Bell Center to organizing all this, the reporter, everybody that had support me. And yeah, that's it.
All right, so former UFC welterweight champion, former UFC middleweight champion, future UFC Hall of Famer George St. Pierre, saying that his fighting days are over. Not necessarily surprising, of course. I think we all kind of knew this was coming, or not too far away. You know, thought there may be a one-off here or there left, but we knew that George St. Pierre didn't have years left of competing. But still, a very, very big day in the sport. And, I mean, listen, you have to consider him among the greatest of all time. You know, I think when you had that discussion, the people you're talking about, of course, you're going to throw in your Anderson Silva, you're going to throw in your Fedor Emelianenko, you're going to throw in your John Jones, you're probably going to throw in your Demetrius Johnson, you know, unless you're a casual, then you wouldn't bring up there. But I mean, those are a handful of names, but I do wonder, I mean, I think it does add something to George's legacy when you add in the fact that there are no controversies surrounding him. There are no, you know, drug tests or outside of the cage issues. I mean, an incredible representative of the sport outside of his competing as well. And man, it is a shame to feel that it's over. I feel that it probably is over. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, he could always come back, and he could. It's not that he's physically unable to compete. He could come back. But I think he said it best himself today. You know, the fire is not really there.
The hunger is not there. It's not there, John.
I mean, we just played audio. We don't need to have more audio. But, I mean, great producing there, Cole Cobb.
I found that random bit.
A little more clip.
Yes. John, I speak French, you stupid English, because.
Amazing, man. Always on the spot, getting the stuff behind the scenes that people aren't picking up. But I don't know. I feel like this is legit. I don't think is going to be one of those. I mean, you remember, I mean, the first quote-unquote retirement, he never said retirement. He stayed away from that. This is his first real official, you know, set in stone retirement. I don't know, man. I get the feeling. Okay, so I was gonna say I get the feeling he's gonna stick with it, but
it does. But it does. But even in and I'm trying to think. It wasn't in that particular small section, but somebody did later on press him about the fact of, you know, what it would take. And I can't remember, he was sort of talking about whether, you know, if there was a big offer to do a movie and then come back and do something. I just think that if enough money is dangled out, I think any fighter is willing to come back, especially, like he said, he's not going to be one of these guys that retires and goes and gets fat.
Right.
And he's like, I'll be in the gym tomorrow. So he's going to be in fit, and he appreciates how fit he is and how his body looks or feels now more than he did when he was, say, 25 or something. So I think with enough money in a short enough time frame, I think we could probably see it. You know, if the time starts getting where it's 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, then I think, okay, no amount of money is going to bring him back.
Right.
But I think in the interim, whether it be this year or next year, for sure, I think a dollar value alone could bring him back. If you start getting in the 3 year range, then I think there's a point where he's like, no, the hunger is just not there, as he said.
Well, it's funny too, because all right, so if you're gonna play the devil's advocate game too, the other thing is, I mean, if they came to him on like 2 weeks' notice and said, "Hey, it's 195 pounds and it's in 2 weeks," I would think he'd almost be more up for that than to say, "I got to go put myself through a 12-week training camp," because that's the part that sucks, right? I mean,
for sure,
everybody at that level loves to compete.
I completely agree.
So that's kind of funny to think about that maybe a last-second opportunity would be a better opportunity because he doesn't have to put himself through all that. Now, it wouldn't be at 170 pounds. You know, I'm sure he's not going to walk
say,
around
but
as that.
But that's what you're thinking. You're thinking like maybe like a Woodley fight or something?
I don't know. Something a middleweight fight or a catchweight fight of some kind on last
middleweight would just be shat because it's like you just literally gave that one up.
I know. All right, well, okay, so let's get into this because he said it. And listen, he was trying to get a fight done with Khabib Nurmagomedov, and I mean, I see fan reaction going like, absolutely. In fact, there was somebody that sent us an email to the MMA Junkie account that was like, you guys should start a petition, man, because this is a fight that the fans want to see. And the UFC has to understand that this is a fight the fans want. This is a fight the fans need. And if we can prove to them it's a fight that we want, then maybe they'll make it. But I got to say, I kind of understand the UFC's perspective on not wanting to do a fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov. And you just touched on it. I mean, it's that fact that, man, you would be giving Georges St-Pierre a chance to come in and – because the understanding was that it was going to be at 155 pounds for the lightweight title. That was the idea, to give George an opportunity to be a three-weight world champion. And, of course, to take on, you know, another one of the greatest of all time, if not, you know, one of the greatest at least pound for pound right now, in Khabib Nurmagomedov. But I kind of understand the UFC's perspective on that. Like, George already came in once and proved, and he said it today. He said, listen, I have no intention or desire to think about multiple fights in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm only thinking about right now, one challenge for me, what makes sense for me right now. And to be honest with you, I kind of get the UFC's perspective of saying, why would we give Georges St-Pierre a chance to walk in, win another one of our titles, throw it away, and screw up the division again and take some shine off our champion?
Which is exactly what the last one was.
Right.
Even though he didn't want to say it, and he didn't say it in those words, I think he probably still could have got that. The middleweight fight that he did, it's the exact same scenario, except that one he played with he used the right words for the UFC to say okay, but for him to just kind of probably see this and the UFC is like, all right, we're not going to buy that line twice, you know, we're not going to do that sort of thing. So I can definitely see it, but I like it that he's just being honest and open about it. Like, hey, if you want to make a huge fight, a huge ton of money, let's just do it. But I mean, what I don't get is the fact that that's what the UFC has kind of pivoted to lately. All ratings and everything else seem to have went out the window. You know, it's like, you know, of course, yeah, it should be like Khabib and Tony fighting, but everybody's like, oh, hey, no, put Khabib and GSP, Khabib and whoever. You know, they're looking at these other ones. So it's like you kind of get the feel that the UFC has really went this way now where, you know, rankings be damned. You know, it's what makes sense for where they're at in their fiscal year or something. So, I don't know. It's just I don't see why. I mean, I can see where some freak sort of fight now could happen as opposed to legit defenses for a division. You know, it's kind of weird. It's sad that it's got there because this is what we've been kind of harping on forever. You know, it's the shit that used to drive me crazy, what they did for Conor. I mean, I love the fights that came out of it, but it was just like, division be damned. Yes, you have this belt and you have this belt. You're never going to defend it. You're going to do something else. And now we're getting the thing where now it's just these random title fights, these of course, fan favorite title fights. I mean, I get it. Fans are appreciating, they like it, but I think also the fans are like, what is going on with these divisions? Why have a division at a certain point, you know, when they're not going to honor the division when it comes to defending the belt?
Exactly, and that's what I think about it. I think it would have screwed up, especially at lightweight right now. Man,
imagine if they just had a roster, and it wasn't so much. They're just like, all right, you just have to get to a certain weight class. So they wouldn't list me as a UFC lightweight. Granted, they would never let me at a UFC lightweight. But I would be on the UFC roster, and then it would be on me that if a fight came, I just had to make that weight. And then it doesn't fucking matter what my ranking is. I just got to be able to. And then you could just pick and choose or whatever. But that would be madness, and that would be absolutely ridiculous. And that's kind of where they've gotten sometimes. Just it's out of control, you know?
And that's why I said the lightweight division is so loaded right now. I mean, you got Dustin Poirier saying, cut me because I can't get a title fight. You got
potentially Max Holloway moving
up to fight Tony Ferguson, which is also weird. You got Conor. I mean, there's so many fights at lightweight that I do understand, again, why they did this. I tell you what, and I know GSP said that, you know, the Bisping fight moving up there, you know, caused him some health issues. So maybe that totally ruined it. But to me, this would have been a great time to go ahead and do GSP Anderson Silva. I mean, no disrespect to Jared Cannonier, but that fight is such a weird fight to me, man. I like Jared Cannonier, man. He's a cool, interesting dude that's on his way up. But
I'll talk about that. Just right now, first gut reaction, who do you see winning that
Cannonier.
Fight? So do I.
I know. I do.
You know, that's why you'd almost want to see it with George, just because you feel like – I feel like GSP – maybe would bring something out of Silva. Maybe we'd get one last, like, great moment, you know?
Yes.
Because I think what happened with, especially with the two strikers of him and Israel had moments that we thought he was maybe going to push him more, and we thought maybe, you know, Anderson would kind of push him more, but he was very hesitant.
Right.
I think this could be one where, one, you know, there would be some good striking, but there would also be those moments where George is like, I'm just going to grab you.
I'm going to take you down
or whatever. So we would have some
forced
interaction.
That's right, a forced engagement. You're going to have to go to the tie clinch. You're going to have to throw some knees. Yeah. You're going to have to defend yourself. I mean.
Jared's going to take him down as well. I mean, I think Jared has everything in the ability to just fucking manhandle
he's a beast of
Anderson,
a man.
Unfortunately. But, yeah, I would. So I'd almost – rather than see Anderson, because if Anderson keeps losing these ones, one, I could see where, you know, at that point, then he's just filling out his contract.
Right.
Because I just feel like he's not going to make it back to a title thing. And I would almost rather him while his shine is still there. And he'll always have shine. Grant, he'll always have some level of shine because it's Anderson Silva.
But if you're going to lose to a fellow all-time
great. If you're
going
to lose to a legend.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't agree with you more. So, I don't know. I think that would have been a great fight to make.
That would have been a good fight.
And, I mean, I don't know if the timing – and I guess probably it's too soon because GSP did look pretty lean. I don't know how he could get to 185 by that time. But, you know, it looks like because Amanda Nunes isn't going to be ready to fight, or at least Holly Holm's not going to be ready to fight, or however you want to look at it, that fight's not going to happen. And because of it looks like that fight is not happening.
He did look kind of lean, like he was hoping that a certain fight would happen.
He looked very lean. He looked like he was getting down to 155. But that would have been cool because, dude, you can't tell me that GSP versus Anderson Silva wouldn't sell out a stadium by itself. Like, dude, you could just announce that and it sells out a stadium, especially in Brazil. If it was in Brazil or Canada, I mean, I would think it could sell out a stadium anywhere between the name power there, but at least in Brazil or Canada would have sold out. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I think there was an option there, but I guess it just didn't make sense. It is a shame to watch him walk away. I mean, the guy is – I was kind of thinking about it, man. I guess there's probably some fans that are newer to the sport that haven't really seen him fight that much and don't really understand his position in the sport and kind of what he means all time to the sport. I mean, if you've come to the UFC in the last – 5 years or so as a fan, you probably don't really know, and that's understandable. I mean, but the run that the guy went on was just incredible. I mean, you look at his career as a whole. I mean, the only two losses ever, he avenged, of course. Matt Hughes, it was too early in his career to fight Matt Hughes when he first got that fight. He matured, he grew, he came. And
that was Matt Hughes was destroying everything. That's another point that I think
Matt
that
Hughes.
People just forget how good Matt Hughes was. I mean, you know, if anything, you know, Matt had the unfortunate accident, you know, and they see Matt, and maybe people don't remember how he was before that incident. Matt in the day was just, he was such a powerful beast. Dominant. And this was a dude, I remember when, I want to say the last time they fought, I mean, GSP was getting booed.
Yeah.
You know, against Matt Hughes. And people that do know GSP, it's kind of funny when you think about it, you're like, GSP getting booed? But that's how big Hughes was. I mean, Hughes was like the U.S. boy, you know, and this was U.S. against Canada and stuff. And but Matt was just destroying dudes. So to see...
You got to put it in context to that era.
Yeah, and that's it's so funny because I was doing the video for the Day of the Debate stuff today, and it was looking at some of GSP's victory, and it was that Matt Hughes fight. It was BJ Penn.
Sure.
And that's another one that even when you listen to the call, you're hearing Joe and everybody kind of just talk about the fact of these were two guys that were so far in advance of the sport at the time.
So true.
You know, that when you see him now, you're like, oh, were they ever really that good? Like, people might look at BJ and see what happened against Ryan Hall, but Ryan Hall's a freak of nature when it comes. But people maybe forget about the fact of how good BJ was because they didn't see it, you know, and they could forget about Matt. But to think about, let alone when GSP first came out, wasn't the greatest, you know, or maybe just wasn't anywhere near where he eventually was going to get in terms of what his skills eventually got to. Then it just got to a point where nobody could touch this guy, that the biggest super fight that they could ever think about was GSP and Anderson Silva. They're like, that's the fight that has to happen. That was before there was the, you know, Connors and the, you know, let's got to have Connor and Khabib, or we got to have John Jones fight so-and-so, you know, that was the super fight. There were no other, like, super fights that anybody ever talked about, like, because one, they never, that whole idea, the concept of a super fight didn't really exist.
Right.
You know, that, and I mean, when BJ it started tossing
BJ
it around.
BJ Penn jumped around.
Yeah.
But that was just BJ Penn jumping around. Like, it wasn't. Yeah. Dominant champion versus dominant champion, like cleaned out division. That was super fight. Not, I just won a title and now want to win two, so I'm moving up. I mean, those are, okay, they're super fights because they're interdivisional fights or whatever, but no. Had that fight come together, dude, that talk was super
fight. Yeah, I mean, when you look at what when TJ going down to fight Henry Cejudo, and there's no offense to those two gentlemen because I absolutely – think they're both phenomenal fighters and wonderful people as well, but when you look at that, they build that as a super fight.
Yeah.
That's on a whole nother fucking level. That's not close to what this
it's
was trying to do.
It's a great fight.
It's a great fight.
Great fighters, but that happen to be in different divisions.
People aren't going to tell stories.
A super
like when,
fight.
Especially when GSP and Anderson, when they were originally talking about that's the shit. I could see people were like, if bards still existed, like the songwriters of long ago. That's the shit they would write, and they would tell on the road as they're passing from town to town. The traveling minstrels would say, sit down, let me tell you the story of one Spider, a man from a foreign country who just devours everybody in front of him. But let me tell you the story of the shiny knight from the land of maple syrup who plans with his sticky hands to take over the spider. And will devour the spider. Who will win? Will evil triumph over good, or will good fall
Please,
to
good
nature?
Bar, continue on.
Tell me. And then he spin the story on his lovely lute or a random other stringed instrument.
Oh, my God. So. I just want you to keep talking about that and tell the whole story. Well, it didn't happen. So
I know, but,
don't
that,
have to.
But that that's the kind of shit that happened. Nobody's going to go and be telling stories of these random other
fights. Going to do that, I promise you. Yeah, you know, it is
the
true, though.
The sticky hands.
It's so true, though. You know, just going back through the record, I was kind of trying to think of, like, my favorite memories and that sort of thing. You start looking at his record, man, GSP, there's no fight in there where you just go, like, who? Like, I don't remember that. Bisping, Hendricks, Diaz, Condit, Shields, Koscheck, Hardy, Owls, Penn, Fitch, Sarah, Hughes, Koscheck, Hughes, Penn, Shirk, Trigg, Mayhem, Miller. You got to go all the way back to Dave Strasser in 2005.
Who?
And if you're a hardcore fan, you know who Dave Strasser is, but where I can at least excuse a casual for going, I don't know who Dave Strasser is, I would get that. But that also was not in the UFC. Jay Heron, Carl Parisian, those were his other two UFC opponents. Even outside the UFC, Pete Spratt. I mean, come on, man. The guy fought
everybody. That's pretty impressive. Now, it's funny because you go through that list and you're like, wow, that is such an impressive list. I can already see people chiming in their heads listening like, well, he really didn't win that fight. he didn't win that fight. That Hendricks fight, he didn't win that fight.
You
he
know
probably,
what's funny is?
Probably should have lost that Condit
I
fight.
Just,
you know?
So when I got here, you know, you were doing some work when I first got here. And so I said, you know, I'm going to sit down and rewatch that. That
the Hendricks
167.
One?
Yeah. I mean, that fight was so close. And it basically, it all comes down to how you score round one. And
I could see that.
Holy
shit. How did you score it that
close.
Night?
That night, I think I was doing the play-by-play. I honestly don't remember, but I looked at myself, and I'm pretty sure I was doing the play-by-play, and I scored it for Hendricks live, but rewatching it, I think it should have been GSP.
Yeah.
I think GSP was the right call.
I don't know if I've ever went back and rewatched, but I know I was working that night, and on as much as I could pay attention working that night, I thought Hendricks took it.
Yeah.
You know, and even at the end, you know, there's that shot that's on the sports images or somewhere. I'm sure we put on Junkie or whatever. There was the elation in Hendricks's face, and in the background, you kind of see George like, "What the hell was that?"
What
you know,
did I just go through.
And that's you know one of those images I remember thinking like, "That's it." Hendricks realizes he did enough, and GSP's like, "Oh, what happened?" And then when it didn't happen, I was just like, "Huh?
Heartbreak.
Really?"
Heartbreak.
You know, so, but yeah, I mean, it's hard to take away from what the guy did, but, and you touched upon it earlier. GSP always, for me, was that guy that, he was the martial artist. He was the respectful guy. You didn't, you know, he wouldn't be pushed into talking shit.
That's right.
You know, like, you might say whatever, Bisping tried his hardest, you know, and George would just laugh, you know, but, and I'm sure guys tried it before, even before then, but he was always this guy that was perceived as like the martial arts. He'd come out in his gi, you know, and he's doing his thing, and it's just like, wow, like, I love the way he bowed to his opponent before, he bow afterwards, you know, and it just, he seemed to me like he was one of the good guys in the sport, you know, and you, so you can kind of feel, you don't want that to ever go away in this particular sport. I mean, the more guys that come in and have that respect to the martial arts, respect to their opponent, don't ever really get to the point where they're like, oh, I need to sell. That should be the promoter's job, not the fighters to go out and do it, but I get it why the fighters go out and do it.
You want to take an active role
you
know, in your...
You want to shape your bit. You want to build your brand. You want to push it out and make it easy for someone to promote, but there's something that's still beautiful about guys that just take it for the martial arts side and kind of are able to separate a little bit from the showbiz.
Yeah.
And luckily, his talent and the way that his career and the wins that he did, it was easy for that to shape the direction of where his career was going in the fights.
Yeah.
It's a little bit tougher for other guys. You know, it's one thing to be a great honorable martial arts, but if you're not getting the fights put in front of you to put on these displays that'll help shape your career, I can see why you have to do what you have to do to kind of force it that way. And in this day and age, you know, the talking mouth and the loudest mouth and what sells the most gets the fights, you know, unfortunately.
There's no question about it. And he went down a different road, man. He handled himself with a professionalism. You know, if there was a criticism, I guess, because we're not trying to say this was the perfect martial artist, the perfect fighter. This is the I mean, the guy didn't die. We can criticize. He's just retiring, right? We don't have to be all good. There is criticism of you know. I mean, he did have a ton of decisions. You know, he did.
Yeah.
But I mean, they were generally pretty dominant and pretty controlling. And he was again facing the top level competition of his day. You know, I guess if you were going to add, you know, if you were going to start making arguments about greatest of all time, maybe that would be one of the ones you'd levy against him, as he didn't get the amount of finishes that you might expect out of, you know, some other people.
Yeah,
that, you know,
I get that.
And I think that's a fair criticism.
It is fair.
But it doesn't take away from who he was. I mean, the guy, what he accomplished as a martial artist is incredible. And I can tell, you know, people always ask, oh, where's the best place you've ever watched a fight? What's the most memorable? Dude, I've said it before, but I mean, this is the perfect time to say it again. GSP fighting at the Bell Center, unbelievable. In Montreal, the arena is huge. It's 20,000 people. It's built very vertically, so the you know, because it's designed basically for hockey, and you're trying to get people on top of the ice as much as you can. So it's very, very vertical, and the different levels are kind of stacked right on top of one each other. And because of that, the acoustics are just incredibly, incredibly loud. And those were some special, special evenings, man. There's no question about it. Just the energy that was in the building was nuts. Of course, he also was at USC 129, which was the first stadium show in Toronto. That one, I always said, if you were there that night, anybody that was in the building that night would probably agree. I mean, visually, it was stunning, man. Like, I remember before they let us, you know, down to Media Row, they brought us up to the press box. They held us there for a little bit, but there was an overhead view from the press box. And I think the USC actually published some photos and stuff from there. And just, it was stunning to see, you know, the number of chairs and seats and all that stuff. It was really cool. The atmosphere for the fight wasn't as amazing just because the stadium was so big and loud. The crowd wasn't really, really loud, and it was kind of spread out. So the atmosphere of the fight wasn't as special as the Bell Center, but visually it was something pretty cool. And of course, yeah, man, that Hendricks fight, man, just pins and needles, man, just razor thin fight. So, yeah, man, you know, I didn't expect a whole lot more out of GSP, but
yeah,
you know, one or two more fights, kind of a shame, I guess, that it didn't happen, but you know, it's business, right? You can't let them come in and screw over your guys, man.
Yeah.
You know, hey, look. If GSP beat Habib, you know, that ruins any kind of a Habib-Connor rematch. But, of course, then that would right away open up GSP-Connor,
why do you think,
right?
It ruins it?
I mean, because does it mean as much if – I mean, if GSP – I guess it wouldn't. I guess maybe
you're
right.
I think people still on that one would want to still see if Connor could redeem himself against Khabib.
Yeah.
I think even outside of the fact of whether a belt – is on the line.
That's
I think,
what I was thinking.
I think
the
was
belt
what,
or the, I mean, the unbeatable it. Aura. Like,
yeah.
Like, what if
Connor
if,
wanted to come back to Diaz right after that loss?
Right.
There was like, in his mind was like, Diaz,
right.
I want to fix this. And I can see where Connor could want that. But I also see right now the bargaining is chip is in Khabib's favor.
Right.
So Khabib's like, if I want it.
Okay, but it wouldn't be as
so I see so, why Connor's chirping for other people.
But
now.
Let's see, like if Connor came back, if Connor, and I don't think you do the Connor Khabib rematch right now anyway. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
But if you were gonna do it, if it's Connor coming back against the still undefeated, you know, aura of this man, you know, that's amazing. Versus if you're like, I mean, let's say GSP somehow head kicks Khabib and the fight's mm-hmm. over. And then you do the rematch between Khabib and Connor. Then what? Connor's coming back to beat the man that just got knocked the hell out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think it takes away from something. I mean, you're right. The personal rivalry is still there. The personal sense of accomplishment is still there. But I don't know. I think it would mean less. I mean, I feel like the Diaz trilogy is always there no matter what. But I feel like it's because of the first two fights and the way they went down and the fact that they went down back-to-back. You know what I mean? Like, if they didn't go back-to-back and then some fights had happened in between and then the results were still the same, I don't know if you'd still be like, oh, I got to see the trilogy.
Yeah.
I got to see the trilogy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes the same, like, what if you see a fight with Connor and Cowboy and say Cowboy just starches him.
Right.
What is Connor worth after that? I mean, do you try to – is there any even – you don't even want to see Connor Khabib after that. It's because you're just like,
Connor needs a
we're
win.
Just going to see something else, you know? I mean, so he needs a win bad. He wins. He needs a win. The UFC needs him to win because they need him to get – he needs to right that ship because I think they're feeling that – I mean, good on Connor to kind of – he took control of his career and really pushed his agenda to get what he wanted because – I think he realized at some point you lose the shine. You're going to get losses, and eventually it's not going to be to that point. So if without some wins to kind of keep that going, at some point the big crazy, crazy multi-million-dollar pay-per-view buy events aren't going to happen if those fights aren't there because I think people are just like, do I care enough? You know, but that – all leans in line. He's got to keep his nose clean. He's got to do the right thing and
so
just
cute.
Come out. I mean, I think – I see what you did there. I just meant don't go breaking some fucking windows and don't get in trouble. Don't do some
playing.
Crazy shit. But, you know, because he needs that. The sport, I mean, like, I don't think the sport needs him as much as he needs the sport. Now, I think we've realized that Connor's kind of been off doing his own thing. And look, the UFC's still here.
Right.
MMA's still happening, you know. I think it's great when he's there and he's doing his thing, but I think he did great for what he's doing. But, yeah, you're right. He needs a win. He needs to get going. I mean, I'd love to see a big fight, that Cowboy thing. I'd love if he can get the Connor thing. And even outside of it, because then I just feel like we're doing, like, dream matchups or matchups that are fun. And then I guess I can see why the UFC's like, well, division rankings be damned. Let's just have fun while we're having fun with these guys before we lose them, you know. So I don't know, but to go back to GSP, it'd be sad to see that all gone. I still think with enough money in short enough time frame, we'll see him again. But it's just good. It was good to just good to see him on camera again doing something. Unfortunately, it's for a retirement thing,
Yeah.
you know. But this lately, this just like,
He seemed
is
in
he
good spirits
back?
though,
Is he
didn't he?
coming back? Is he
What?
coming back? You know. But it was good to see him, and he, you know, it's good GSP. I mean, it's just he's a good dude. I mean, I love appreciating watching him fight, and that Bisping one, man, that was just. I don't know. I remember there were moments watching that fight thinking, like, oh, he's getting tired.
Yep.
Oh, it's too big for him. Oh, he should have been back sooner. He's just not there. And then to see him pull it out and just do it, and it was like, oh, that's why he is the great.
Just baited Bisping perfectly in that
Just
finishing
enough. Just
sequence,
did it
man.
perfect, man. I mean, his mental side of fighting, his as much as he might seem that he's getting beaten on it and pushed down, his. He's got to be one of the smartest fight game guys out there, and his heart and his belief. And that's why I liked in the presser when he talked about some of his favorite moments. He talked about recovering from the Connor, I'm sorry, the Carlos Condit head kick, you know, and he talked about coming back after the Serra loss or whatever. I mean, like, that's cool. I like hearing that instead of just saying, oh, you know, what I'm most proud is when I just torched the division. Over and over, and nobody could touch me. You know, it was getting over those moments of being humbled and losing, and then, or getting down, and then finding that strength to kind of persevere and prove to himself that he was what he could do and did what he did. You know, I mean, it's, I loved hearing that, and then hearing him articulate it and say it all again, and then realizing that, man, we might not see him in this form again. You know,
You got to think
it was a
he'd
little
be
sad.
a phenomenal analyst. I mean, and I don't mean so much. I like not somebody that I would want like on the call of a fight. I mean more like in a studio, like just
In a studio,
because
or maybe doing like what Trevor's doing. You know,
that's it.
as a just every once in a while go to that guy that you can give some
That's
insight
it.
on
I don't
something.
need to hear him. I don't need to hear him talking for hours on end. And maybe he'll be too
Yeah.
expensive of a personality to do this. But you gotta think he's gonna continue training, so he's always gonna be up
Yeah.
on the latest techniques, the latest developments. He's always gonna, and this the psychology and the strategy, as you said, man, one of the most cerebral, smartest fighters in the game. Yeah, I don't want to see him. I don't want him to do like color commentary. Like I don't want him to be Daniel Cormier. I don't want him to be Dominic Cruz. I don't want him to be Paul Felder. You know, I don't want to be that guy. But yeah, as you said, a Trevor Whitman almost is almost better, where
Yeah.
we're just going to him in spots because
Yeah.
we know that if we need some insight, this guy's got it. And I mean I think he's gonna want to be around the
Yeah.
game.
Imagine I know he's wants I know he wants to get involved a lot with I think the Toronto MMA game or just the Canadian MMA game, whether it be youth or whatever. Imagine if the PI, if they want to bring on some staff and actually bring on an actual technique coach or something that can be lean on. Imagine if you knew in advance so and so's coming and you can reserve, and if this he's on a retainer with the UFC, he's like, you know, I'd love to come work with coach at the PI if he's available, you know, and just have him be like, okay, who's on today's roster today? Oh,
Oh man,
GSP, Coach Pierre's in there, you know.
I wonder if not that he's like a anti-UFC guy, but because he's kind of pro-union, because he's pro, you know,
Pro big paycheck
I wonder if
too. I
they'd be
mean,
like, eh,
but they are kind of
let's not
separate a
have
little bit
him.
too, so maybe. But I can see that. But if he's going in there and he's as an independent contractor, he would be negotiating his own contract,
Yeah,
so it wouldn't
but I
be like
wonder
a
if they're like,
typical.
ah, we don't really need his influence on these people.
I could see.
All right. Well, listen. We'll see what happens, George Saber. I think he'll be around the game. Speaking of Paul Felder as a name, man, Paul Felder. This lasting issues from UFC Phoenix this past week. UFC on ESPN1. We did not get to do an and a half show. Unfortunately, it was very late Sunday night when we finished working.
But
And
it
then
was
by
out.
that
It was
point,
also out of respect because Felder couldn't do the presser. We were like,
yeah, we're like, well, we
we
shouldn't do that.
probably
No,
shouldn't do
basically it
one.
was work. And then by that time, I did figure, you know what? Normally, it's a Sunday, and maybe we could sneak something in. But there's going to be so many Monday shows coming out. But you know what? It did give me an inspiration that because I love talking post fight talk, man. What's going on? So here's my commitment moving forward. I'm going to find a way to do a post fight of some kind, a little and a half episode. Even if it's just kind of a mini episode, even if it's me solo, you know, if you're still stuck editing video or whatever the case may be, because obviously That gets pretty time consuming, man. Just the amount of work that you have to do and the amount of time it takes. But I want to do something. So hopefully people will be okay with that. Even if it's just me talking solo. I feel bad talking solo because, as we all know, Cold Coffee is really the MMA expert. I'm just kind of here to set up the bard.
If you look at my past record, not my current record.
I mean, you're the 2018 MMA junkie
has been
picks champion.
I'm the has-been champion.
So if people are okay with me talking solo, I'm gonna do something like that. And I don't know. Maybe I'd like to get the Patreon thing going again. Maybe do something over there where it's like a subscribe for like $1 a month or something. I don't know. We're gonna figure it out. It's not the full podcast. I don't want to. I don't want people to tune in and not hear you and be like, I hate this. I tuned in because I like John Morgan and Cold Coffee. And if it's just me by myself, maybe they get bored and hate it. But if we're doing like little mini shows for the Patreon and it's our family, I know they won't hate me. So we'll figure out. But I'm going to start that with UFC Prague. I'm making that commitment right now. UFC Prague, we'll have a post-fight show, a little and a half. And it may just be me. It might just be me. Hopefully people are okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're at your house, I'm
– dig that.
Would just be you.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to drive all the way over here, but
you can. We'll figure it out. Here. If not, yeah, you could always call it. Because yeah, when would that happen? Because it just depends.
Probably just immediately after the fights.
Well, I'm just trying. Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to think if I have to. If I would be editing any
see?
Other stuff.
That's why it makes it so hard. Because you're the producer. I got to have my producer in. So we'll see what's going on. I did want to say though, man, Paul Felder, best wishes to him. But 1 week later, or 5 days later. Have you figured out what happened with Ngannou versus Velasquez yet? Is there an agreed upon sequence of events of how this fight ended? Because
he got
man, we were debating it in the press room, and yeah. I feel like people are still debating it.
He got clocked. I mean, I think they still debate it. I mean, yes, I think his leg gave out, but you could see that his head snapped back a little bit. And we've seen when people get the little stanky leg after they get a little shot. So I think what happened was that he got hit. I think his leg went a little stanky leg, and then it gave out.
I agree.
In that moment of where he was the leg was trying to step to the side, and gather where it was, and then the knee was just like, I mean, it's hard to discount the fact that when he did sort of go down, his knee went down, and look on his face, I could tell that his knee definitely tweaked him.
Definitely.
But to think that he was going for, say, a takedown and then the leg gave out, it didn't look like that to me. It looked like he took a shot. And we've seen what a shot of Ngannou's on people's chin, what it does to their body. I think that the leg certainly went out, but I think it was after in response to taking the shot on the chin. I think it just tweaked when he went out, and then it must have hit a tender moment. But, I mean, he definitely sort of, I don't even know what you call it, sort of butterflied out when his knees and his legs kind of went out. But without seeing that head hit or snap back, then I would think, oh, that's weird,
but you could
his
see
legs.
That
but since you see do it. See that, I think that there was a hit. And, you know, and it's the
that's
fact
what I
that,
felt at the
that,
time.
That Kane's like, oh, no, he didn't touch me. It's like, well, obviously now you obviously – you were kind of out of it because you didn't feel that.
I was thinking about that since, man, because, people were kind of debating, well, Kane said this, Kane said that. But that's like – and it was funny because I even felt bad kind of asking him the question. But it was so – like none of us were sure that I was hoping he could provide some insight. Yeah. But even in retrospect, like me kind of thinking back to it, I don't normally ask a question like that because it's like, hey, bro, do you remember getting knocked out?
Yeah.
Well, nah, that's because I was knocked out. Now, he wasn't out cold.
Right.
But even when you're wobbled like that, you don't remember it. And we're talking about immediately after.
It was immediately after. I mean,
I don't feel like it was inappropriate to ask because I think we were just hoping for clarification. Yeah. And I do appreciate everything he shared about the status of his knee. He made it clear that was a problem. But it was kind of a, I don't say a bad question, but it's a difficult question to answer because – nobody remembers when they were rocked because you can't. Your body, your brain blocks it out, basically.
Yeah, and it would have been a lot different if post fight he did something and was like, "He never touched me. It was just my knee giving out." But he wasn't like that because I would have loved to have seen, to go back to like a Rogan moment. Well, let's watch the video. Show me.
We've got it right here, Kane.
You see your head snap back, but you're saying that the punch didn't hit you there. You know, just what he said in the ring.
I would love to see you do that.
Yeah, what he said initially in the ring and then what came out afterwards after, you know, was able to sit and maybe think about it. You know, I think the biggest thing that is his that he remembered from the fight was the pain he felt that when he went down and his knees did sort of flay out. And it's hard. You can't discount the fact that, yes, you could see his legs sort of go out and he sat down in a very awkward, bad position that I'm sure tweaked his knee. But I think he just forgot that initial part because there had to be some contact. This wasn't – it wasn't like the head hit his chest, Francis's chest, and came back. I mean, there was a clear separation. Then you see the head snap back. So – if he's saying that didn't happen, clearly there was a misconnect somewhere. So it's hard to not think that that didn't play some effect into it. It's a nice short little sort of uppercut in there, you know, if you will. Or so I don't know. I like Kane a lot, but I still think that it was due to Francis, and then that coupled with the fact that he's still recovering for even though he said he felt great, he's 100% whatever. I mean, the guy's his knees have been going bad for a while, and I think coming down the way that he did, I wouldn't recommend for anybody but a gymnast or something that has the flexibility that's used to doing that move. I think that probably would have hurt anybody going down in that fashion.
Yeah.
But what caused him going down in that fashion wasn't just the fact that his leg gave out. It was in reaction, in my mind, to taking the shot that gave him a stanky leg.
I agree. And
you have to call it stanky leg.
You have to call it stanky leg. I have intermittently, over the course of the past few days, by the way, been listening to Crone Gracie's walkout quote-unquote song, which was just 5 minutes of the Purge siren being played over and over, which in retrospect I now believe is one of the most gangster walkouts ever. At the time, I was like, this is bizarre. And now,
it was symbolic. It was kind of
like,
symbolic, like the
all emergency
there
services
it
have been halted. Okay, now that
his
was
first
a, that
words.
Was,
no,
that
bro,
was
you just don't get it. You just don't get the symbolic. It was very symbolic, man.
That
he's like, he's
is
like,
something I won't be playing over and over.
I mean, like if you're thinking the Purge is here, it is. We're gonna come clear all the rubble. We're gonna clear all the has-beens, the people that's been there before, and let me just kill every one of you on my way to the top. But, you know, and also, too, he's like, I wonder what it's going to be like. I wonder what it's going to be like. Man, so much. And he's like, whoop, there it is. That's your answer, folks. That's what it was.
He went from the high of the Purge siren to the low of whoop, there it is. All
I mean, if you could justify why the Purge siren was good, you know, then I can easily say at least what the other one was doing.
Vicente Luque, Brian Barberina, grown-ass men, dude. That fight was pretty freaking phenomenal.
That was awesome.
Aljamain Sterling, I thought, looked phenomenal. Andre Feely out, Chad Miles Jury. That was great, man. I like Andre Feely. He's a good dude. Aljamain Sterling looked phenomenal. Andrea Lee looked great, man. I thought she looked impressive. Nick Lance, I was bummed that we didn't get to hear from him because that was a hard-fought fight over Scott Holtzman. Luke Sanders had the gutsy comeback. And Emily Whitmire was happy for her. She trains out of Extreme Couture. So anytime you see somebody like that that's in the very beginning of their career and it's somebody that you see every day, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, you know, grinding to see him succeed is pretty cool.
And especially,
cool.
Like, especially with her case, you know, hearing, like, she's serving tables if she's not training for a
That's
camp
right.
or whatever. She likes the money, but of course, you know, she'd want to get out of it. So it's kind of – it's these are still people that a lot of them on certain portions of the card as they're working their way up are still having to do the 9-to-5 grind, still having to do the other things. You know, they're part-time fighters, full-time teachers or whatever, you know. So I always want those people.
Cool.
I want them to do well because I'd love to see the transition to where it get to the point where they're just like – I can walk away from the other stuff and do this full time, which I think she kind of is pretty much almost at that point when she is in camp and doing it. But and I've worked in food. I know you've worked in food.
Yep.
You know, having that cash in hand after working a couple shifts, like
that's nice.
That's nice. But I mean, that's why food people that work in food industry, I know some of y'all out there listening to this do. That's why y'all get drunk, you have good times because you get that cash in hand. You're like, hey, fuck it, we just worked 10 hours, people are killing me right now.
Yep.
Let's go have some drinks, let's just blow off the night, let's just have some fun. And you can do that over and over because you got that cash, man. I'm telling you. So I respect it, but I like the idea of still seeing where she's at, but knowing that she's so close to being able to just say, I don't need to serve anymore, like money's good on the other way. where she can do it now, just for if she could just do it to a point where she's like, eh, you know, I feel like having an extra 500 in cash. Let me work a couple shifts real quick, you know, and get some money and then blow it out, and then I'll be good and I'll go back to training, you know, or something. So
I
don't
do.
know, but yeah, and she's, I think she's a sweetheart. She's a cutie pie.
She super is, man. All right, let's get to the event this week. UFC on ESPN Plus 3. It is UFC Prague.
Those names fucking suck.
Versus Santos. Yeah, it is. It's funny. You know, I see a lot of people on social media like, oh, change the damn names. I will say, and I guess it's more.
But they
for,
can't just go and say UFC Prague because then what? UFC
then what
Prague 13.
Two, three, exactly.
UFC Prague 14. It's the
they
same.
They actually do that
damn
in Brazil.
Thing.
So, like in Brazil, like if in just the local market, yeah. They call it like UFC Rio 7 at this point,
wow.
UFC Rio 8. But it is kind of funny because, at least for the U.S. audience, the name of the event is actually a good tune-in reminder. Like, it's helpful. You know what
true.
I mean? Like,
I can see that.
So, and I can tell you that internally, because I've seen internal documents, the UFC still does refer to it the same way we do, which is why we do it that way.
Yeah.
UFC on ESPN Plus 3, you know?
Right. Remember when they'd be right now, if it was just like UFC Fight Nights, it'd be like UFC Fight Night 4003
exactly.
or something.
Exactly.
Which internally would suck.
It would be bad. So, all right, UFC Prague. But we are not covering that, unfortunately. But Abby Subban and Simon Head are out there in the Czech Republic, and right before I came over here to get a cold coffee, I did get our man Simon Head on the phone and get a little take from on the ground here in Prague. So let's listen to that. This is my conversation with him. We'll kind of do a little event preview with Simon Head, talk about what he's seen so far, what's going on over there, and what to expect out of this weekend's card in Prague. All right, joining us live from the Czech Republic, a man that joined the show recently, but I didn't have a chance to talk to. By the way, thank you for that Bellator coverage, my man. But it is Simon Head out there in Prague, soaking it in. And look, I know you're not exactly on a tourist trip out there, but give me a sense. What's the city of Prague like? Because I've been told by anybody that's ever been there that it's just an absolutely gorgeous city.
It is. It's a beautiful place. I'd be lying if I said we've seen much of it, but we got in late on Wednesday night and we were straight at it first thing this morning with media day. So it's been pretty much sort of balls to the wall since we've been here, but it is a beautiful city. We're hoping to get out a bit later tonight and check out some of the sights and sounds.
No doubt. You know that's how we do. Of course we're going to get out and check out the sights and sounds. Don't say you hope it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Frosty beverage is going to be ingested, I assume.
Absolutely. We've discovered that there is actually a Hooters within 10 minutes walk from here. So we may purely for comparative purposes have to go there. Also, they're renowned. People who listen to this show know that Hooters is renowned for their outstanding Wi-Fi. So we're going to go and check that out as a backup location if we need some extra uploading facilities later on in the week. We know that that's our go-to place.
Yeah, surely just for the technological advances. All right, let's talk about the scene there. I mean, you guys got through with media day today. I know you've been busting your ass on that. But, you know, something that kind of came up in our conversations earlier, and I wanted to get a little further insight. You know, of course, this is the UFC's debut, first time in Prague. But it sounds like they had a pretty decent local media turnout. So give me an idea what the scene was like. Are the locals turned out? I mean, is there some real interest for the UFC here?
There really is. I mean, when we got here, I honestly was expecting to be, you know, maybe four or five different outlets here at most. And, you know, sometimes when you go to some of the smaller shows in smaller markets, sometimes it's just you, John. I've seen how it is on Press Row on Fight Night. And I wondered if it might be a little bit like that. And we spoke to some of the UFC PR staff, and they said that they were expecting about 80 to 100 media staff from media outlets. And we were like, really? Is it really going to be that many? Media day was packed, but it ran really smoothly. It was really good. The host broadcasters, Nova TV here, were, you know, they had a strong presence here. They were doing plenty of stuff. They seemed to be really up for this. I mean, I was talking to the UFC's Dave Shaw earlier today, and it's a bit different, this show, compared to when the UFC normally pitches up in a new market because, for example, when, you know, they came to the UK for the first time, but also whenever they go back there, they're able to throw a load of UK fighters onto the card. And you see it everywhere they go. They like to get local fighters on the card. Well, looking at the main card, we've got one representative of the Czech Republic on this card in Lucy Pudilova. So they haven't got that huge group of fighters that they can put on the card. So they've had to build a card that's going to suit the Czech Republic. And what we've got is a card full of interesting matchups that maybe aren't what you would call A-list matchups that you'd see on pay-per-views, some of them. But I think we're going to have an entertaining night of fights on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point you bring up. And I kind of curious about it because, you know, in the build-up to this card, you know, I saw a lot of fans and European media kind of speculating what kind of, you know, Czech fighters the UFC might be wanting to bring in for this fight. And I guess, you know, maybe the fact that ticket sales just went so swimmingly for it, they thought, well, we don't need to add anybody. You know, we got what we need. And I kind of wonder if that ends up being more a positive than negative because, you know, we've talked about it in the UK. We've talked about it in Brazil, other markets. I mean, there's no question that local fans want to see their local fighters, right? I mean, they want to have their guys or their girls to cheer for. But at the same time, you know, I think a lot of USC fans don't want to see the people they've seen fought on their regional scene in a UFC cage. They want this talent from other locations to come into them, you know, people that they've seen on TV, people that they've watched. And so I wonder if maybe what seems kind of weird might end up being a positive because these fans, you know, again, we're not talking about huge superstars on this card, but at least they're going to be seeing talent from all over the region rather than, you know, what I think sometimes ends up being kind of a regional card taking place in a UFC cage.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you take a look down the fight card, you know, we've got a wide spread of weight classes. We've got the women's flyweight division all the way up to 7 foot tall Stefan Struve in the co-main event. So, you know, we've got a good spread of weight classes. We've got fighters from all over the world. We've got Brazilians, Americans, a load of Europeans, obviously, on the card as well. It's almost as if this is like a tasting platter for the, you know, for the Czech Republic market. It's a little bit of everything on here.
I like that. All right, let's talk about the guys that you spoke to at Media Day. I'll kind of go in reverse order. You know, the main event we know about, but I thought the guys that stole the show, and maybe it's just me, were John Dodson and Peter Yan. I mean, from the fun face off with, you know, of course Dodson's always going to smile and have fun with it, but Peter had a little nonverbal shade, I think is the way I use it in the headline. But I thought that was a great way to kick it off, and to me, a meaningful fight. And you know, listen, I know Peter isn't the most outspoken guy, but I think the way I phrased it in the story I wrote up from your interview is that he makes his words count. You know what I mean? He doesn't say a lot, but he said that TJ Dillashaw needs to either defend or vacate. You know, he doesn't say a lot, but he said he's getting tired of John Lineker and he's sick of the guy always, you know, fighting easier opponents. But to me, I don't know, this was the one that kind of captivated me. Is it the same for you?
Absolutely. I think this is the fight that if Peter Yan can get the win, I think you're going to see him sort of fast-tracked up that bantamweight division and you're going to see him in some big fights because he's got something about him. As you say, he doesn't say much, but he's got something about him and he's a very, very exciting fighter. I mean, I've watched him fighting for ACB before he got called up to the UFC. And he's had some absolute wars in ACB. Anybody on YouTube can look up his fight with, I think it was Magomedov in ACB. An absolute barn burner of a fight. And he's got a really interesting test because he's up against Dodson, who he's like grease lightning, isn't he? He's very, very hard to catch in the octagon and to catch him clean. So that's going to be a real test for him. And as you say, you know, it's a real clash of personalities. And it's always nice on Media Day when you get the stare downs, you sort of look down the list of the matchups. And we said beforehand, you know, we're not going to get too much here in terms of aggravation or trash talk or anything like that. But, you know, Dodson and Yan gave us a little bit of personality and, you know, we're very grateful for that. And it gave us a nice little headline for the site. It was, I think it's going to be a very interesting fight to watch as well.
Yeah, I'm really, really intrigued by it. Great clash of styles. I mean, Dodson, when he's on, man, he's capable of fighting anybody. And Yan, as you said, man, I think this is the potential that he be his kind of breakout moment. And that division is getting so fun, man, to add his name to the top of it. I think would just be even more exciting. So that's honestly, I got to be, you know, probably the one fight I'm most intrigued for outside the main event. I did want to ask you about Liz Carmouche versus, by the way, the woman that I used to call, and actually I still probably will, Lucy Pudilova is the way I've always said her name. But it was funny, last week in Phoenix, Phoenix, they were running the pre-fight videos for this card, and I'm sure you'll probably get to see it at the weigh-ins tomorrow. But the local promo, they threw the local flavor into her name, and I now know that in Czech, I guess it's Lucia Putilova. So I've been corrected there. But I wanted to ask, what kind of draw? I mean, knowing that they had a big turnout, was Putilova or Putilova, if you will, was she getting the local star treatment? I mean, she's not a huge long term vet, but she is somebody that's been in a couple scraps. Was she getting the hometown rub, or was she just another person there at the media day?
I definitely think she was getting a fair bit of attention. I think normally what happens on a media day is people will flock towards the two main eventers and the big local star. And I think when me and Abby Saban, who's been absolutely killing it with the video edits at this end, when we looked along the line of fighters, Lucy actually had quite a few people around her early on in media day. So definitely there's some local attention there. And being the one Czech Republic fighter on the card, there is quite a lot of expectation on her, I think. And I don't know whether it's because she's just a little bit nervous in front of the media or whether she's just a little bit anxious, but I think that came across a little bit in the interview. She did seem a little bit twitchy, a little bit anxious. Compare that with Liz Carmouche, who, no one's been in the UFC in women's MMA longer than Liz Carmouche. She's the very first woman to ever set foot inside the UFC octagon as a fighter, and 6 years, it's going to be a 6 year anniversary of that particular occasion on fight night this Saturday, so should be looking to mark that with a win.
That's amazing. That's a great footnote. I always kind of love that trivia piece. Carmouche, yes, she lost that night, but she damn near beat Ronda Rousey, and she was actually the blue corner, so she got to walk in there first. All right, let's talk about John Volante, who you're always going to have fun with John Volante, but then you add in Chris Weidman, and Chris Weidman decided to be a New York interpreter for your British English, and then at one point decided to just take over your job and be a reporter. let us know what happened there before the camera's rolling, and maybe just kind of what you're thinking about this fight against, let's be honest, kind of an unknown in Oleksijczyk, but a guy that's returning from a drug suspension. And Weidman and Volante had no problem talking about that.
Absolutely. I mean, Jan Volante was actually the last guy we got to on media day. And it was kind of funny. I was just standing there. We were waiting to talk to Jan. And it just occurred to me that definitely more than 50% of the people we interviewed today had translators with them. And I just turned to Abby and said, John Volante doesn't have a translator. Do you think he's feeling a bit left out? So I just grabbed Chris Weidman and said, how do you feel about being his translator? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. This will be fun. So camera starts rolling, asked a couple of questions. And I think Chris eased into the role and decided he could do better than me, and then did. And has now put me out of a job, so I'm off down the job centre tomorrow. Chris will be doing all the post fight interviews and filing copy, and this is probably my last ever appearance on the roadshow. Chris Weidman will be on next time, but no, it was great fun, and him and John obviously go way back, and they're always picking each other's nose behind the camp, in front of the camera, as I did last time I saw John on camera. There's all sorts of crazy stuff happening when those two are around. And Weidman loved it. At one point, it was something I didn't manage to catch on camera, sadly. During media day, we were queuing up. I think we were queuing up to talk to John Dodson. And we had John Volante was just sitting there waiting for someone to interview him. And there was a queue of people queuing up to talk to Chris Weidman, who happened to be standing next to him. So it was like Chris was having his own personal media day there. And John is actually the one who's getting in the cage this weekend. He's just sitting there sort of twiddling his thumbs for a couple of minutes. It was kind of funny. But it's going to be an interesting fight. Mikhail Oleksijczyk, I think he's had one fight in the UFC. He won, and then it was taken off him as a no contest. Right. But Volante, I asked him about his split decisions. He's had four in a row now, two wins, two losses. And then Weidman just sort of half buried me and then buried him. sort of said, "What the hell's going on? What the hell's going on with you? What's going on with all these split decisions?" But you know, he just wants to knock him out and go and drink beer. And I think we can all appreciate that sentiment.
Absolutely, man. That John Vellante is a roadshow favorite, and he means it. That's all he wants to do is just knock out and go drink beer. But it was funny, man. It was a great interaction. I definitely recommend anybody get a chance to watch it. Dudes on MMA Junkie or the YouTube, because if ever there was a guy that didn't mind somebody stealing the spotlight, it's John Vellante when he's talking about Chris Weidman especially. So those guys are pretty good. The co-main event, Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, Stefan Struve. Man, I mean, interesting clash of characters, right? I mean, Marcos Ruggiero de Lima had the problems making weight, finally moved up to heavyweight. Doesn't look like he didn't belong there, to be honest with you. Just a big, thick dude. I mean, big hands, big shoulders, big thighs. I mean, the guy is massive. And then Stefan Struve, it's just, I don't care how many times you're around him, until you stand next to that 7-foot frame, man, you just forget how incredibly big he is. Stefan, the guy that's, you know, in the beginning of his career said he was going to fight 50 times in the UFC, and he was so young. You know, I thought he might be able to do it, but he's had these health issues. He's had, you know, I think maybe some confidence issues over the years. He toyed around with the idea of retiring at one point. I'm really intrigued by this matchup. I know it might not mean a whole lot in the standings themselves, but just a clash of styles and what it means for each in their career, I am pretty intrigued by it. What did you kind of take out of, first of all, just the stare down today and seeing those two massive dudes next to each other, and then, you know, just talking to them both?
It's crazy. I mean, Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, if you just looked at the video of the face-off, you would think that he was just an average-sized man. He's not. He's 6'2", and he's a big 6'2". You know, he's absolutely solid. And standing up against Stefan Struve, it's cartoonish whenever and I mean this in the nicest possible way. Yeah. You can't stand next to Stefan Struve and not look ridiculous, even if you're a 6'2". Monster from Brazil like Marcos Ruggiero de Lima. He looked dwarfed by Struve. So you've got, you know, the visual impact is there already. That's going to be an interesting thing on fight night. But I think there's, you know, there are some high stakes in this fight that are maybe not immediately on the surface. I mean, you've got Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, who has tried to forge a career as a light heavyweight and has come up against problems against the scale as much as anything else. Yeah. And has now moved up to heavyweight. And he seems very relaxed about the fact he's now at heavyweight. He doesn't have to worry about cutting weight anymore. He feels like he feels much more comfortable in his own skin right now. But they've given him the biggest heavyweight on the roster in Stefan Struve. So he's got himself a big, big test in front of him. And he's got this Muay Thai kickboxing style where Struve sort of very, very clearly sort of explained all this to me when I spoke to him. Ruggiero de Lima, he likes to stand up close and throw short shots. Whereas Struve, he needs to use his jab, he needs to use his kicks and keep it at length, which is something that for a guy his size, he probably hasn't done well enough in his career. I think he probably would have more wins if he used his height and his reach and his range a little bit better. But Struve's coming into this on a 3-fight losing streak. And we all know that, you know, losing streaks in the UFC put you on slightly dodgy ground. And He tried to brush it off a little bit when I asked him. He said that, you know, there were extenuating circumstances for a couple of those defeats, but he seemed pretty confident and he seemed relatively relaxed heading into this one. But you know, I would guess that defeating this one is kind of out of the question for him. 4 in a row is a tough one to deal with. But Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, he seems in a good place himself. He's a lot more relaxed. And it's one of those classic fights where whoever controls the range will control the fight. It's going to be an interesting one. And I very much doubt it's going to go that far. I'll be amazed if it gets past the midway. If the under-over is sort of halfway through the second round, I would expect it to be done by then. So,
yeah, I agree. I think this card could definitely end with fireworks in the co-main event. And then, of course, the main event as well. I mean, what an unlikely main event. I mean, just the idea of putting these two guys together, Jan Blachowicz and Thiago Mejia Santos. I mean, just the idea of these two fighting, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, just wouldn't even make any damn sense. And then to add to that the stakes. I mean, this is a meaningful fight. I mean, Jan, you know, 2 years ago looked like he was done. Like he was just aging in front of our eyes or you know, I don't know what it was, but he just was not getting the wins that we thought he was capable of when we saw him fighting on the European scene. And then meanwhile, Maheta, yes, he's always, you know, been on an upward slant. He's had some setbacks along the way, but not at 205. And now you see the guy at 205, and I don't know, it's kind of one of those, like, Anthony Johnson approaches where when they move up a division, you're like, how the hell did they ever make the other division, you know? Because Maheta is not a small man, so, I mean, oh, this fight, I'm loving this fight. It's meaningful. Give me an idea kind of what you took out of talking to these guys today, and, I mean, do you have a lean one way or the other? Because, again, like I said, it's crazy. Maheta, you would think the guy moving up would be the one that, you know, had the bigger challenge, but I don't know that that's true.
I think it's a coin flip fight. I really do. I mean, you've got you know, Thiago is a fascinating story. He's been in the UFC for 5.5 years, and it's only now he's moved up to 205, and he's only had two fights at 205. Yeah. He's never been closer to a world title shot than he is right now, and he's only had two fights in the weight class. It's insane. And, yeah, for a guy who used to fight at 170, you know, we're almost in Anthony Johnson territory again. How, you know, you know, as you say, but it's – and he's such a destructive striker. But then on the other side of the coin, you've got Jan Blachowicz, who pound for pound might be one of the toughest men in the UFC. His ability to take punishment and just keep coming forward at that weight class as well, you know, they're not tickling each other at 205. You know, we've got some big, heavy guys throwing some heavy leather at each other. And, you know, Jan's been in there with Jimmy Manoa, who's one of the most destructive strikers in that weight class. And Manoa couldn't finish him on either occasion. That should tell you everything you need to know. He's gone the distance with him twice. He's in the best form of his career. He's won 4 in a row. He says it's all down to the fact he's reunited with his old coach, which I think he's referenced in previous interviews with us a little bit earlier on in his win streak. And you've got Thiago, he's sort of found his sweet spot at 205. And it really is a case of sort of you pay your money, take your choice. Do you go with the seasoned guy who, you know, he's done the hard yards at 205. He's been in there with some of the best in the world at 205. And, you know, the last time he got finished, John, was back in 2011. Sokoju stopped him. I think it was a retirement on the stall at the end of the second round in KSW, and he avenged that loss two fights later. So, you know, we're talking, I think it's about 15 fights since then, and he hasn't been stopped, and he's been in with some good opposition. So to expect Thiago Santos to come in there and just dust him quickly, it might be a bit of a stretch. Then you've got yourself a very scary contender. And, you know, the other point with these, with both of these fighters, if you take Anthony Smith out of the equation because he's fighting John Jones next weekend,
right,
these are the top two highest-ranked guys at 205 who haven't yet fought for the belt. And, you know, in the spirit of keeping the division moving and introducing new people to the top of the division, the winner of this is going to have a pretty strong claim for, if not a title fight, then certainly a title eliminator next time round. So, you know, it's a really pivotal fight for the division. It's a pivotal fight for both guys, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too, man. I think it's going to be interesting. Like I said, I think those top two fights could end in fireworks. Listen, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I did want to kind of just get your take on prelims. Anything that's standing out? You know, it's funny. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Look, I these cards they load up on us. I mean, it's 1 week after the other, after the other, after the other, and you kind of forget what's on them. But I was sitting down this morning and really kind of, preparing myself for the interviews that you guys were going to be sending over and really digging into the card. I tell you what, it's not names that people are going to love, but the first part of those prelims, the way they kick off, the records that these guys have, 15-1 Yoel Alvarez versus 17-2 Demiris Magulov, 14-2 Diego Fajeda versus 23-3 Houston Khabibov, 17-2 Ismael Nardia versus 26-2 Michelle Prezeris. I mean, those are all incredible records. I know, you know, not necessarily the biggest names or in all their cases, not necessarily the most exciting guys, but some real quality in terms of records there. And then, of course, you know, you've got some other names on here, you know, from around Europe and from around the world, actually, with some of the other fighters. But give me an idea. Is there a fight or fighters that you're looking at most on these prelim card that you're kind of most anxious about?
There's two matchups on the prelims that I think are both going to deliver seriously exciting fights. I think Damir Hadzovic versus Paulo Reyes, I think, could be an absolute barn burner. Paulo Reyes might not be the biggest name in the UFC, but you look back through some of his past work. That man loves nothing better than to just stand and throw leather with people. And Damir Hadzovic is about as willing a dance partner as you'll find in Europe. He loves to get in there and do exactly the same. That might be a sleeper for fight of the night. And at featherweight, Daniel Tamer versus Chris Fishgold could be a lot of fun as well. Daniel Tamer, I think he's still looking for his first win in the UFC, but he's a heavy-handed striker. Chris Fishgold is similarly so, but he also has excellent submissions. Look out for his guillotine choke. That's his go-to move. He's finished a lot of people with that. He too is looking for his first win in the UFC. So that's going to be a fight full of fireworks. Carlo Pedersoli Jr. versus Dwight Grant might not be too bad a fight either. Both those guys are looking quite strong going into this one. But I think the Hadzovic Polo Reyes and Tamer versus Fishgold, they're the ones that are standing out to me heading into this one.
Yep, I agree, man. I'm excited for both of those. All right, brother. Well, listen, I don't want to keep you too long. You've been generous with your time. I don't want to keep you away from the local delicacies at Hooters. Obviously, that's imperative. You should definitely check that out. And, yeah, you got to get out there and check out Prague a little bit and enjoy it. So, you know, listen, we're gonna bid you farewell. But as you do, we'll throw it to your interview with Dave Shaw, because you were able to pull the world boss man aside and get a little bit of stuff from him. So just want to say I appreciate the time, my friend.
No probs. Thanks a lot for having us on.
Dave Shaw, thanks so much for taking the time. Pretty much rescued you from a huge scrum of local media.
Yeah.
First event here in the Czech Republic. How's the reaction been?
Yeah, it's been huge. Like massive buzz in the city. The event sold out in a matter of days. We hardly had a card at that point. Open workout last night was really well attended. It reminded us of a Brazil open workout where it's in a mall. There's people clamoring, you know, over the rails to get a sight line to some of the fighters. It's been great. There's real buzz in this city. And it's one of those things where, you know, it kind of makes you wonder why it took so long to get here. I mean, it's not for lack of effort. We've been trying for a long time. Sometimes it's just a matter of when the arena lines up with the availability date. And also you got to have the right card. So we're here. You know, we're making an impact, people are loving it, and we're excited.
Normally when you go to a new market, you've got a huge clutch of fighters from that country that you can put on the card. It's a little bit different here. You've got Lucy Pudilova on the main card, but that's pretty much it. You've not got a huge sort of archive of fighters you can bring in. How has that been some sort of challenge in terms of putting together a card that's going to fit the market?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily a challenge. This is a real opportunity for us. I mean, every country, you know, develops at a different rate. You know, we just talked about how many, there's over 90 Brazilians or something under contract with us now. You know, we've got 20 to 25 Russian/CIS fighters. You know, we're in it for the long haul, right? If we're here, we're putting on a live event, we are connecting with fans all across the country. This is a starting point for us to help nurture and develop mixed martial arts. We know that's a very vibrant MMA community here. So you can, you know, rest assured that next time we come to Prague or another city in Czech Republic, that there'll be a number of new fighters on board.
You're making a bit of a flying start in Europe this year with events in back-to-back months. You've got, obviously, this weekend, and we've got London, and there's talk about another one here in mainland Europe, you know, the following month. It's really busy. How many events are we looking at over the course of the calendar year, would you say?
For the EMEA region, we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 or 7. And the benefit we've got this year, unlike last year's, is with the ESPN event, ESPN deal, we've talked about this before, being able to hold events here locally in prime time is a way to make such a much more meaningful impact. So for us, you know, we're going to be in the UK a couple times, you know, continental Europe, mainland Europe a few times. We will also be in Russia. We've been very vocal about committing to Russia a couple fights a year. We're looking at the Middle East. We're looking at a few different countries we haven't been to before. So it's going to be an exciting year, and you're right. I mean, so far, 2 for 2 on sellouts here in Europe, and I think that's a testament to how, you know, far along the brand has been built, and, you know, what a great MMA community there is here.
And in Europe, we've got some big-name stars. Obviously, Darren Till is headlining London. Alexander Gustafsson has already made his reputation fighting on the top of cards here in Europe, and they've both fought for world championships and they've just quite fallen short.
Yep.
The fact that they're now building back up, how important are they to your strategy? when you're putting these cards together for the European region?
Yeah, I mean, hugely important. And you've got a long list of very successful European fighters, whether it's, you know, Volkan and Joanna's here. You got Connor. Look what Francis did this past weekend. Having key athletes in each region is very important to us for a number of reasons. And, you know, when it comes to building the card, you know, local fans want to see local stars, but local fans also want to see the global stars. And so it's always going to be a blend of that when we go to each region.
How much of a, I don't want to use the word battle, but I can't think of a better one. How much of a debate is there behind the scenes when you're trying to put these cards together and you need to get that balance and you need to bring some of those more widely known names onto these cards when perhaps they might be better suited to being on a pay-per-view card?
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think what we try to do as, say, the business unit operators is provide the matchmakers with as much data as possible. In the end, those guys are the experts. They're the sophisticated ones when it comes to matchmaking. They're going to make the decisions, whether it's myself or Borsari or Dropic, bringing in some information to say, hey, we should, you know, consider this guy, he, you know, or this a female athlete. He or she has a huge social media following in this region. You know, this is something to consider. We give them all the tools to help make decisions. Ultimately, those guys are the ones that make the decisions. I can't tell you whether it's a battle or not. I just know that there's always going to be a balance to make sure that we're getting viewership and we're getting tickets sold. It's part of the product. It's part of the atmosphere at events. You know, we always want to have, you know, a big, very energetic crowd. And so, you know, I think it's less of a battle and more just about, you know, a calculation on, you know, how to sort of spread some of the key guys over what really is a pretty condensed period of events. I mean, we're going to have 42 events this year. It's nearly an event every weekend. And so, you know, we need to be able to be smart in how we're spreading fighters out.
And breaking new ground here in Prague this weekend. Obviously, going back to a familiar old territory in London, what are the expectations heading into that one? Because the card looks pretty stacked.
Yeah, pretty stacked. I mean, I don't know. I mean, every time we go to London, it's off the charts, and I think this March will be no different. Expectations are huge. I mean, you know, we just redid the deal with BT. We've got sort of reinvigorated approach to content creation, which includes athlete profiling, like making sure that we're, you know, we're focusing on key guys. Even this weekend with Chris Fishgold on the card, BT has invested a lot to make sure that we're building his profile. Nathaniel Wood's going to compete in London. And we've got a long list of European guys that our broadcast partners here, led by the team in London, are going to continue to center around because, you know, it's you know, the key guys are always going to get a lot of spotlight. But it's our job to make sure we're building fighters from, you know, fight one to fight 20.
And we've got a situation where Rose is set to go down to Brazil to defend her title. Europe, obviously a massive market for MMA.
Yep.
It's been done before where we've had a pay-per-view on US time zone, obviously in Manchester with Michael Bisping.
Yep. Even the Stockholm event wasn't a pay-per-view, but it was late, yeah.
So is the door still open to that sort of event, assuming the matchup is the right one?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the best example for that is what to do with Conor, right? Like, he's got a number of fights left. He's still hungry. He wants to fight in many different places. He's been like really active on social media lately and, you know, talking about what an honor it would be to fight Anderson Silva. He was talking about wanting to fight on home soil. All these types of things are taken into consideration. You know, we are largely bound by needing to have pay-per-views at 10 p.m. Eastern in the U.S., but, you know, there's nothing to say that we can't. So at some point, perhaps we will. It's not on the roadmap right now, but, you know, what we want to do is and what Dana wants to do principally is create the best fights and the biggest fights for our fan base all around the world. And so if we have to do something a little bit atypical, then we will.
So potentially, if you're talking about the rule of having the pay-per-view on at that set time, I guess if you're ever in a position to break that rule, it would be with someone like Conor McGregor, who can sort of transcend the time zones a little bit. And
yeah,
is a homecoming realistic?
I don't know if I can answer that. And not because I'm, you know, withholding any information. I just don't know. I mean, there's a lot of kind of unpredictability, I guess, when it comes to the roadmap for his next few fights. You know, we obviously want him to fight in the U.S. He wants to fight in a number of different places around the world. I don't know if it's Brazil or Ireland or what, but I think we'll see in due time. Not a lot of information to share right now.
Appreciate the time. Thanks
Absolutely.
Very much.
Thanks,
and, best of luck for the event.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was our man out there in Europe, Simon Head.
The Gubna.
Followed by his interview with Dave Shaw.
The Gubna.
I don't know if you may thought you might have something special for him.
No, I was actually still thinking in my head. I was like, why did Kamikaze not get on the old?
Well, he was working at the time. You know how it is as a video
I know,
person.
But still, I was like, I wanted to hear the old Mr. Abdur over there.
Well,
Abdur Saban.
Even without Abby, even without Kamikaze, it was still a fantastic segment.
Yes,
so
it was
say,
good.
If you like what you're hearing, do us a favor. Make sure you're logged into iTunes. Make sure you're subscribed. Take a second if you wouldn't mind. Just give us a little rating. If you can give us 5 stars, that'd be phenomenal, man. We'd really appreciate the 5 stars.
Yeah. Tell your mom about us. Tell her, listen. Send your mom our way.
Maybe you could leave some feedback as well if you don't want to send your mom. Maybe you could just leave some feedback. Leave us a little comment on what you like. Well, you know, I mean, what you don't like, but mainly just what you like. We like the positive affirmation, if you don't mind.
That's right. Do what GSP would do and not talk shit.
There you go.
Leave be GSP respect. And let us know.
All right, listen. You know, I don't want to break down the full card. I mean, we kind of did that with Simon, but listen. I mean, Jan Blachowicz, Thiago Mejia Santos, a big fight there. Outside of that, I mean, I think Dodson and Peter Yan is the one that I'm most excited for. No question about it. But you know, I know you'll be working alongside us. You'll be watching these fights on Saturday morning here in Las Vegas.
I will be watching.
Anything you're most excited about, or anything you're most you know you were looking forward to, or
Carmouche and Pudilova.
Yeah.
I think that'll be fun because I always want to see where Liz is still at. And I think Lucy is super, super tough. I think she's so quiet sometimes that it's like, you know, you wonder how into the fight
she's
fight week. She is super shy. But
And then she gets out there and bangs.
And then just literally destroys chicks. So that one should be fun. What's some other ones? Rogério de Lima and Stefan Struve.
Yeah,
I think that's an interesting
that's
one because who did you go with that in your staff picks? You went Struve?
I went Struve.
I went Lima on that one.
I don't blame you.
And I think I'm not sure why
Hard
I did.
Hitting, powerful
He's
dude,
just so
man.
Big and so powerful. But man, Struve, if Struve ever really just that length, if you ever use that length, I think 100% like he could because he's got good submission skills, but we never see them anymore. It's always comes down to striking. And then this too, I lean towards Lima's striking on that one. Just another little, Marco Polo Reyes fight. I think that should be a pretty good one.
That's a solid one.
I mean, all these guys, I mean, the Pedersoli Jr. fight, I mean, there's some really good fights. But, again, I love the fights at the top. But Jillian Robertson always, I think,
she's
is
fun.
Another one. She is so
She's fun.
Fun.
I like her little attitude.
So,
man.
Yeah. Little, so, that could be a good fight.
A little gangster, man. I think we're going to have some fun fights. I mean, I get it that, you know, it's funny because – you know, as I was talking to Simon, you look at the quality of the records that start out the card. I mean, those first three fights could be good. They could be a little slow.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got guys that have great records. I mean, Michelle Prezeris, for one, you know, amazing record, not always the most exciting fight. So, Rustam Khabilov, amazing record, not always the most exciting fight. So, we'll see, you know, if their counterparts can bring it, if they can push the action a little bit. Then once you get into that top half of the prelims, I think you're talking about some action fights there. And I think the main card
should be fun. That Khabilov-Ferreira fight could be really fucking good.
It could be.
That could be a really good fight.
It could be.
I think both guys – I can see both guys coming to bang on that one. So that could be one that could easily – steal the start of the show.
And I'm not
going
to lie, as much as I would love to be in Prague, I know you've been there, and everybody says it's an amazing city. As much as I would love to be there, I will say fights that start at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm on board with all day.
Yeah.
8 o'clock here in the Pacific time zone.
Oh,
11
I was thinking
Eastern.
It was 8 o'clock there. I was like, well, that's really weird.
No,
but
eight 8 a.m. for us. I mean, to wake up, throw on some coffee, and start watching some fights, to know that we're not going to be working until 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm all right with that.
No, I get you. I get it. But no, Prague's like one of those places. It's just, I know we've went over it before. It's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful city. I mean, I think the country is just so neat. I mean, the food. It's funny. I talked with Abby and I was like, make sure you go out and you have some goulash. She's like, oh, they had it at the media lunch. And goulash is like one of those things. I remember as a kid, I thought it sounded so horrific.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'll never want to eat something like that. But goulash is really, really good, especially you get it with that nice little gravy. It's got a little dumplings in it and stuff. But there's great. And there's this nettle beer that I told him to try some, the nettle beer, which it's an interesting sort of taste, but just to actually be able to try some of the beers they have over there. Their beer is absolutely incredible. The cost of food and drink over there is really, really good. But there's a lot of just amazing history over there. The buildings were probably some of the most beautiful buildings I've ever seen. They kind of reminded me of when I was in Austria and some of the other places. There's just these a lot of pointed steeples. I don't know what the architecture term is. In my dumb world, I would say, oh, they look kind of like castles and stuff on the top and with these different just old buildings. But they also there, you know, really look back at the point when they were ruled by the Communist Party, and then their fight to get out from under it and then just grow. And the community itself is just amazing. But also they're a very free country. You know, they like the beer, they like their food, they like their sex, they like the freedom of speech. It's just such a unique place. So if the weather is good over there, I mean, it's one of those places where it can rain, it can be really, really shitty, but when it's sunny, it's beautiful. And as long as it's not raining and too wet or anything, I'm sure they're having a wonderful time. So no, I'm very sad that we're not there, but in terms of being able to just kind of sit back and, for the most part, for an event, just watch an event is absolutely fantastic.
That's not too bad, especially early, man.
I'm loving it.
Not a bad way to spend a Saturday morning. Should say, by the way, Bellator does have a card this weekend as well, Bellator 217. And not that I'm completely overlooking it, but two things. Number one, it really feels like a Bellator Europe card. I don't mean that in any disrespect, but I mean this is a show in Ireland, James Gallagher versus Stephen Graham in the main event. Miles Price versus Peter Queeley in the co-main event. Charlie Ward's on the card. Richie Smullen's on there. It feels like kind of a Bellator Europe card. I'm not as excited about this. It doesn't have the big international names. And on top of all that, even with DAZN, it's on tape delay.
Oh, that sucks.
I know. And I don't think it's a very long tape delay. If I remember right, it's a couple hours. It's not a full day or whatever, but it's just...
Which is better, but this tape delay is fucking sucks.
It is, man.
The fact of knowing that you're watching and it's already done and probably been reported on.
Of course, man. You got to stay off social media if you don't want to ruin it. So no disrespect to Bellator, not giving them the love that they deserve. But I don't know. Just the fact that this card is not as strong as I would expect for kind of a numbered event, so to speak. I know that's not the same way as like a UFC pay-per-view, but
it does look like one of their European.
It feels like one of the European series cards. So if anybody thinks we're just kind of glossing over that, I apologize. That's the only reason. You add in the quality of the card and the fact that it's on tape delay, and I think that's more of just kind of a Bellator Europe show.
Not that it matters. Are there any U.S. fighters at all? There's one that I see, according to Tapology. Stephen Graham is the only American on the whole card.
So there you go.
It's a Bellator Europe card.
Bellator Europe. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. My wife is texting me. It looks like the snow's actually picking back up where we are. She's sending me some videos. It's actually getting heavy. So not
the gravel road, man, out there. You got to watch that shit.
Not that it's getting too late, but I actually am going to be up at 11:30 p.m. Pacific. I'm going to start working. So basically midnight Pacific. The official weigh-ins will be on, so I'll be helping those boys out there get that stuff reported. So I gotta get out of here and get home safe down that gravel road and try to.
I hope that you can make it, man.
You gotta get the mountain pass that we have to get through to get there. It's
I know at some point you probably have to get out behind because the road's so narrow. You guys gotta make sure that one car at a time passes around the bend.
You're so ridiculous. By the way, I live in a very nice neighborhood. It's a very well built neighborhood as well. By the way, so
it is a very nice neighborhood.
Anyway, all right, that's enough. I gotta get out. It's cold. It's snowy. Who can believe it? Thanks for listening.